Energy Realities number 96, regulations and protests. Good morning and good afternoon to colleagues and the audience.
Good morning.
Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
May I show a short video before we start?
No. Oh, good. I love videos. Looks like me driving on the farm when I was 12.
That's the numbers.
Oh, hey, we've got one of those convoys coming to Texas today. It's awesome.
Yeah. Tammy, would you like to start with your headlines?
Sure. Excellent. So last week, there was this article in Euronews where basically a group of NGOs and academics and some other people warned the EU Commission that if they allow companies to do net zero, meaning that an oil and gas company could invest in carbon capture or planting trees or whatever, that they shouldn't allow net zero to be accounted in that way, because they need to be setting absolute targets for companies rather than net. And this is something I've been arguing about for some time, that when they talk about net zero, they don't really mean net zero. The policymakers and the politicians actually mean absolute zero, where you don't have any emissions. And so they're trying to bring about pressure, because the EU is supposed to be finalizing different targets and whatnot by February or March before the EU election. So to me, that was just like, yeah, this is par for the course, where they're starting to say, and that is absolute zero emissions, not net zero.
It's impossible to have absolute zero.
Of course it is. It's impossible to have net zero.
Yeah. Because the way they want to account for the offsets is that, okay, you can have an offsetting company, and maybe we'll have a nature company that you people can invest in and say, well, we're conserving nature and we've got all of these offsets there or whatever, but companies don't get credit for that. Governments will get credit for it, or investors will get credit for it. So how that factors into all of the different national determined contributions, I don't know. It's open, but zero emissions means you're not doing anything. You're just sitting in your house and you can't even breathe or fart. So
my question, Tammy, is how is Al Gore going to make a living now?
Well, I know.
I mean, he's become fabulously wealthy on these fraudulent carbon credit trading schemes. So yeah, what's he going to do to maintain his standard of living?
He has a new show, David.
He's a big investor in Octopus Energy, and they have software that they're licensing out to, I think it's 20 some countries right now. And the software is called Kraken, and it's supposed to be monitoring it. And how can I word it? So it monitors how the energy comes onto the grid, and if you have load control. So they have this software that they're licensing out to various countries that will keep your grid supposedly stable. And that's where they're supposedly generating revenue. And he's a heavy investor in that. So maybe, you know, he's benefiting from this through other means, not just him going around on the speaking tour.
I still think he's got a new show coming out, Tammy. He's going to be looking for Sasquatch and the was it Bear Man
Bear Pig? Yes.
Bear Man Pig, yeah.
What? God bless South Park. It's a cartoon program here in the United States.
No, I've heard about South Park, but not the Bear Man.
Well, about 20 years ago, they had some fantastic episodes lampooning Al Gore. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, it's funny.
Demi, the second one?
Yeah, and so this was at the World Economic Forum last week or the week before, where the fellow there was talking about how actually coffee is a really good example of how we don't realize how much emissions we all contribute to. And his big beef with coffee growing is that it's monoculture. So this is the next big thing with the net zero, with the transition, with redoing everything, including agriculture, is they really hate, the policymakers really hate monoculture. So that means if you have a big field of one thing, they don't like it. They want you to have that field divided up into three or four different little segments, and you have different stuff on each segment, or you have it mixed. Now, how you harvest a mixed field, I don't know.
Why?
But his big... Right. Why?
What's the problem with monocultures?
Because it destroys biodiversity, in their opinion. So if you have just one crop, there's only certain types of bugs and stuff go into the soil.
Oh, I see it. And you grow it at the same place year after year. No, I understand this. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you might rotate, but they don't care. What they care about is that one year, it's one crop. But, for example, with coffee, coffee bushes and whatnot, how are you going to stop that being monoculture?
Well, you can't.
You got to mix in cocoa beans with the coffee? I don't know. How does that work? So that's his complaint. And of course, it's just to make us all feel guilty for drinking coffee, for eating chocolate, for having anything good in life. You're supposed to feel guilty.
Yeah, I don't think it works.
Everyone's
exactly. coffee.
Great. Irina, please.
Ah, great crop of headlines. Carbon credits from cook stove emissions largely worthless. actually, this was the first time I heard about cook stove credits, but apparently they're a thing where a company can buy credits for places where old-fashioned and highly emitting cook stoves are replaced with electric ones, less emitting. If you remember, this is exactly what the European Union wanted to do in Africa. Remember, they wanted to buy African people electric stoves to reduce their carbon footprint and improve the quality of air, which is at least legitimate. But so apparently companies like Shell and EasyJet and Germany's E.ON are among the biggest buyers of such credits. And this study has discovered, no doubt with great surprise, that these credits and the trade with these credits does not lead to actual emission reductions.
I'm shocked the Financial Times admits
Let me just quote something because it's really brilliant. I'm quoting here. The academics' review of about 40% of all the credits issued on the market estimated these led to 10.2 times fewer avoided emissions than claimed because of over-optimism about how often cleaner cook stoves were used and the emissions saved by each one.
Yeah, I think it's related to this comment.
Exactly.
You install the electric cooktop stove, but then you don't have any power to run it.
Right. Yeah, then you cut off all reliable forms of electricity so they can't use the electric stove. Yeah, that reduces emissions. Yeah. Sure.
The West needs to stay out of Africa's natural resources. Africa first. Let's let them get low-cost resources and energy. I'm sorry.
Develop their own, yeah.
And it'll be
how do you
for
convince the French and the Spanish and the Portuguese in Europe to stop meddling in Africa?
Well, I think the African nations are taking care of that themselves.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Judging from what's happening in former French colonies.
If it was Lindsey Graham, he'd bomb them.
Oh, of course he would.
Yes. Yeah, that guy is very bomb happy.
He is. He is. He's the classic little man syndrome.
Yeah, he was calling to bomb Iran. That man needs to.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Oh my gosh.
Somebody suggested he should be sent to the front lines. It's a great idea. Ah, another favorite. EV sales are just getting started. Don't laugh.
It's a great one.
Note the date. So this is from January 13th this year. Honestly, I think EV sales have been getting started for about 5 years now. And every year we hear this refrain, the EV revolution is just starting, it's just taking off. And yes. Indeed, last year, EV sales in many key markets, most key markets, excluding China, let's leave China aside, were very much higher. But growth then began to slow down. And this article is sort of an apology, you know. Yeah, they may be slowing down sales, but they're still growing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're citing figures and stuff. And again, a favorite quote, but note, a decline in the rate of sales growth is not a decline in actual sales. Well, yeah, okay, it's not, but you were predicting booming increases in these sales, not a slowdown in the growth of sales after, I don't know, 1 year after there were enough EV models to choose from and really give this revolution the opportunity to take off.
I would just point out, you could have read that exact same headline in the New York Times in 1905.
1905.
Seriously, yeah. I'm not kidding. Yeah.
They did have EVs back then.
Yes, they did. The first EVs hit the market in the late 1880s, and they still haven't perfected the technology.
There's actually one on display at the Eisenhower Library, and it's the one that he used to drive around in, and the battery is so enormous. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Yeah. It picks up the whole back end of the car. Yeah, I've seen that car.
Yeah.
Then if you see some comments that you wanted to share with us, please feel free.
Yes. Patrick is dead on right.
Right. I mean, over half the Ford dealerships, for example, refuse to even try to sell them. Yeah. Sorry, Stu, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's exactly what I was going to say, because I steal your material.
Well, that's okay, because apparently in the UK, there's now concerns that EVs could be a national security threat if they're coming from China, because the EVs are so connected to this and that, and they don't know where that data is going, and it could be a security threat because the cameras are monitoring everything around the car and so on and so forth. So
this is so awesome. So that means Chinese EVs are the automotive version of TikTok, okay? We don't know where all the information is going.
Yeah, and that's the whole problem with insurance in the UK, I understand.
Oh, yeah.
And Tammy, Tammy, did you see this story? I covered this on my podcast this week. Ford has got the patent that they're getting the car, so if you miss a payment, it drives itself to the repo dealer.
Yeah.
You're never going to have this guy show up wearing his pants around his knees and smoking a cigarette, stealing your car to go back to the repo. Now, here's the next one. If you have a bad social score, I hear that they're going to have it drive straight to the police department. You get no TikTok, you get no Twitter, and you go straight. They're going to haul you to the jail. Sorry.
We shouldn't laugh about that, because that's exactly where this is all heading, folks.
Patrick, you're on a roll, baby. I love you.
Oh, yes, absolutely, Patrick. The U.S. will have those big graveyards. No question about it.
And no one can resell them.
EVs. The market is terrible.
I'll tell you, he's got some coffee. I love Patrick.
Yeah, because he's even going, ha, ha, ha. And you're funny, Stu. But he called you Sty, but I think he meant Stu.
Great. Okay. David, please, your first one.
Oh, I just love that headline, Nakedly Political. Who wrote? Oh, I wrote that. Hey. So, yeah, everyone, I think, is aware by now that the White House last Thursday announced it was going to, for no good reason whatsoever, hold up permitting on permitting applications, federal permitting applications for new LNG export facilities in the United States. That is, of course, just an election year move by an administration that remains desperate, has been desperate for 3 years and remains desperate to appease its left-wing climate alarmist funders that fund such a high percentage of Democratic political campaigns in this country now. They've essentially replaced the trial lawyers as the biggest funders of Democratic Party campaigns. Between the environmental groups and the billionaires like George Soros. There's no reason to do this. It's a stupid move. The germinating point that they're using as justification is a study that was, I think Arena wrote about this morning, actually. Robert Howarth, who is a professor at Cornell University, put out a study, the latest in a long line of anti-natural gas studies that are easily debunked, and he's been putting out for 20 years. He's a joke. He's not a scientist. And, of course, the announcement of the study was conducted by Bill McKibben, the famous environmentalist whose college education is a degree in communications. Okay, no scientific background whatsoever. But the administration latches on to this study just as it latched on to a study by the Rocky Mountain Institute, which also makes a habit of putting out easily debunked studies targeting natural gas for its move against gas stoves early in 2023. So this is the anti-science administration that makes these policy moves based on jokes, studies that are absolute jokes that no one respects and no one believes. But that's the state we're in the United States. The good news is that we already have projects underway that already have all their federal permits that are in the process of being built that will add 12 BCS per day of LNG export capacity by the end of 2027, which will enable the United States LNG industry to live up to its commitments to countries that are supposed to be our allies in Europe and Asia and other parts of the world. That the Biden administration is going to, turn its back on with this policy. So after 2027, this policy is inevitably going to create a slowdown in expansion of U.S. LNG. And that's going to disadvantage a lot of countries in Europe that are supposed to be our allies. And that's why this administration's ham-handed diplomacy and foreign policy have set the whole world on fire, because they make decisions that shouldn't be involved in politics at all, on purely political calculations. And that's my rant for today.
I like this bit in the statement. We will not cede to special interests.
They invited an influencer to the White House to discuss LNG. Did you read that?
But they don't cede to special interests.
May we have shortage in Europe?
Do what?
May we have shortage of LNG in Europe?
Maybe.
Well, they could. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Germany relied on U.S. LNG, and other countries are absolutely reliant on U.S. LNG to power their economies. And
Russia, Qatar, all the other ones that are selling are going to win.
Algeria.
Yep.
Well, Irina, what do you think the EU thought of this? Do you think they were supportive?
Well, the EU, recently approved new methane emissions rules for oil and gas imports. So they're on the same page as the Biden administration in terms of priorities, Priority number one, cut methane emissions. We'll worry about the sufficiency of supply later. So I don't know to tell you. They're probably worried right now, but not too much, because, gas consumption is down in the EU because of prices.
Yeah.
And it probably won't rise anytime soon if things keep going this way.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, but you know, part of the reason that the emissions are down is because the industrial base is collapsing.
Exactly. Because prices are prohibitively expensive. Yes. Prohibitively high.
I was wondering if the EU was maybe saying, please help us. We need to phase out. And if you keep saying you're going to be supplying us, how are we going to do this transition? So save us from ourselves.
Wow, Tammy, way to go. I met you.
That's good.
Here's another comment from Patrick.
More of our lives change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could happen. That could happen. BRICS is already much, much bigger, much more influential now than the G7. So, I would anticipate many more countries applying for membership in BRICS in the years to come.
But by the way, did you see this headline in the Wall Street Journal today? I think that the European Union is wondering why the US is pursuing a protectionist economic policy. Really? Really?
Oh my goodness.
So this is the intellectual level at which European policy is being made.
David, it's like a third grade debate class. Megan Lapp, Fox News exposes Biden regulators' conspiracy with offshore wind developers. Yeah, I wrote that headline too. It's absolutely true. Megan has been a guest on my podcast a couple of times. She's contributed several pieces to my Substack. She's brilliant. She's a spokesperson for the commercial fishing industry in the Northeast and has done yeoman's work opposing the development of these big offshore wind projects. And she helped expose the fact a couple of weeks ago that the Biden administration has cooperated with the big wind developers to essentially relieve them of the burden of having to post financial assurity that they'll be able to decommission their enormous industrial offshore projects when their useful life expires. And so what's going to end up happening, I mean, you can see this well in advance, okay? The big initial developers like Ørsted and BP and Equinor, who I'm not trying to bash here, but what's going to happen is they're going to get about halfway through the useful life of those projects, and they're going to sell them to smaller operators, and those smaller operators are going to end up going out of business about the same time the useful life of those projects expire, and we're going to end up with hundreds of thousands of tons of steel and fiberglass generating zero electricity sitting out there and rotting in the Atlantic Ocean. And no one is going to disassemble that stuff and take it down and properly dispose of it. And because no one's financially liable for anything. And that's how they're setting this up, folks. You're all suckers if you support any of this. You're a pure sucker. And that's my second rank for rant.
Well, very appropriate.
David, we have another one.
Oh my God, we have another one. I'm sorry. I'll make this quick. So, we had another offshore auction last week, and the same developers, BP, Equinor, and Ørsted, bought new projects and bid for new contracts because what they had done was cancel their old projects because the contracts they negotiated with utilities and states for the price they would be obligated to supply electricity under were inadequate. Why? Because we've had inflation caused by the Biden administration and its debt funding policies of all this energy transition crap. And it's dramatically increased the cost of developing these wind farms. So these developers, they looked around and they said, oh, you know what? These projects aren't economic anymore. We're going to cancel them unless New York and New Jersey and all you utility companies, you let us renegotiate the prices under the supply contract prices, right? Well, the state said, no, we're not going to let you do that. We have a deal. Okay, well, we'll cancel the project. And then the next auction comes around, they're bidding on new projects, and they're going to renegotiate the deals at a higher rate. And who's going to end up bearing the cost of all this? the ratepayers, and that's a regressive tax that impacts the poorest among us the hardest. Okay? Again, if you support any of this offshore wind nonsense, you're a pure sucker.
Here's a comment from LinkedIn user, no name.
I think the new chant the RNC needs for Decision 2024 is burn, baby, burn, baby. Our next president needs to rein in DOE and EPA on the ridiculous natural gas appliance bans, carbon dioxide taxation, incentivize, not vilify American power grid operators, businesses, and communities east of the Mississippi River to build out, expand natural gas transmission and local distribution systems. Liquefaction is very energy intensive. Yes, yeah, it is.
Great, great comment from LinkedIn user, but that's not me, as it normally I'm sitting here, so it ain't me, but that was a great comment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Stuart, please, your first.
You can't buy this kind of entertainment this morning. And, you know, David, and this goes right along with Tammy. Senate opens door for massive carbon tax despite critical economic concerns. This is my opinion, especially with this article and Tammy's great comments. And that is, I believe that the wealth transfer from the rich or from anybody to the rich, from the poor to the rich, from the middle class, they're getting rid of it through the EVs, through the wind, through the solar, and carbon tax is actually a way to migrate that, continue the wealth transfer to the lurches. I mean, the whatever his name is. Kerry, thank you. And so the Kerry, you know, all the rich are getting richer off of the renewables. That's all this is a way to kick it down the road, transfer wealth. And let's go into the little bit of this right here. The Senate Environment and Public Works voted to send the proposal to the full Senate. These include construction material, plastics, and fertilizer. The numbers, listen to these numbers. On average, the carbon tax covers 38% of the emissions, as high as 81% in Liechtenstein and $131 to a low of $2 in Spain at a rate of 16 per ton. Where this is also going to impact is the oil and gas operators in the U.S., so that it's going to add to the drilling costs. It's going to cost all of that stuff, and they're going to tack in the third scope 3 emissions in this, and they actually don't have the ability to track scope 3.
Of course not.
Scope 3.
It's all estimates. It's all estimate based.
Yeah. And scope 3 is not what you go to your bathroom and drink scope in the morning for mouthwash. Sorry. Okay.
So can I just add something there? Like, Canada's had a carbon tax now for a couple of years, and it's one of the main drivers of inflation, because that money goes through everything. It goes through everything. And, you know, Justin Trudeau has been trying to blame grocery stores or oil companies or all these other things for inflation, when in fact a big chunk of it isn't just his monetary policy as well. It's the carbon tax, because it filters through everything, makes everything more expensive. And, you know, maybe the United States, even though it is in alignment with what Canada's doing, was getting pressure, because how can we compete in the American market when we have this carbon tax on everything?
Isn't it a fund that they can then push the money around to, again, increase their social programs and their socialistic agenda, so that it is a tax to try to help chip in to the $34 trillion that they're increasing at an unbelievable rate. So I think it's a way for them to increase revenues and decrease the actual business of the
They redistribute the money, right? So they tax everybody on multiple, and they put a tax on top of the tax, So we have a sales tax called a goods and services tax, and they tax the carbon tax with that goods and services tax. It's unreal. They tax the tax. Yeah. And so it ends up like doubling their money, and it's really crazy. But then they take it and then they spend it on transition subsidies and whatnot, and they give some money back to poor people so that the poor people feel like, oh my gosh, okay, this isn't so bad. I'm getting a check from the government. But the reality is most people, like a large proportion, are worse off because they were trying to say, oh, we're doing this and you'll be better off. How are you better off when everything's more expensive?
In the U.S., we're giving them to illegal migrants that is funded by the U.N., and we pay the U.N., and then we give them free health care, and I'm paying through the R nose.
So Mike Capps adds, they blame climate change as well.
I'm sure they do. Mike, well, if it weren't for climate change, they wouldn't need to have a carbon tax, would they?
Right.
But the EU is planning to do the same thing, impose a carbon tax on so-called most polluting industries, let that filter through to everybody, and then, don't worry, we'll take care of the most vulnerable, will you?
Yeah, exactly.
Travis,
only to enough extent to convince them to vote for the status quo in the next election.
Well, I don't know if they could, because Europe's poor will remain poor even with that so-called help.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The link of the user is Travis.
Yeah. Travis Lynn. Hey, Travis. Travis, welcome.
Thank you.
Don't know why it's not identifying you. It's weird.
Okay.
Stuart, your second.
This goes along. I always love Irina's articles on the EVs. And I also, Tammy, you had some great ones. When the whole thing in the EV market in the US is FUBAR. Do we know what FUBAR is?
We do, but we can't spell it out.
You can't say it.
they can't spell EV. And so you have him supporting the unions. The unions support him, but yet the policies that they implement are killing the EV market. So you can't buy this kind of entertainment. Let me read this quote. If enacted, this resolution would harm my administration's efforts to encourage investment in critical industries and bring high quality jobs back to the U.S., Biden said in a statement Wednesday. I think I'm going to translate to what he actually said. Oh, my cribble pork. That's Biden and Wookiee. I think he starred in Star Wars. And so they are actually thinking that they're doing good. But when you look at David said that half the Ford dealers are failing. Ford canceled all these great union jobs. And it's because of the policies.
Yeah.
Yeah, the policies are driving all of this.
Yeah, basically, they're trying to produce the necessary EV chargers, all the necessary EV chargers for Biden's program locally. But it's impossible because there are not enough components and raw materials.
Right, sure.
So exactly. They have to import from China. So you have to choose either import from China and not be fully self-sufficient on the manufacturing.
Never.
Really. Or, slow down the transition. And it seems that they will do anything to not slow down the transition.
Yeah.
Which tells me they're really, really afraid, both in the US and in the European Union, that they're going to be out of power soon.
Yes.
Mike Capps and Patrick, great comments. I used to work with Mike a bazillion years ago.
Let me share with you, because Toyota's CEO said the market share of EVs will not exceed 30%. I don't know where, how this guy can say 30 of all vehicles. Is it a bet?
Being optimistic.
Yes.
Well, I think he just thinks they're going to hit a wall on the ability to expand the market at that point. You've got all these limitations on raw materials and manufacturing capacity, and frankly, market demand. Yeah, and mining.
Especially mining. Yeah, because the special material that they need to make cars, EV cars. And
that's from the chairman of an automaker that's made a huge commitment to the EV development, right? Toyota's one of the leaders, okay? That's what he thinks. I mean, imagine what the executives at Ford and GM really think, okay? Despite what they say in public. What are they really thinking? You know, I mean, at Ford, they've just got to be apoplectic about what's happening.
Yeah. Hyperplectic. Living. Wow, David, good one.
Apoplectic.
Oh, so I'm guessing this is Travis Lynn.
Let's go through.
David, well, you want to read that one out?
If you want me to. I mean, or you, Tammy, you can probably do a better job of explaining it.
What's scope three emissions?
So what's you scope have, three?
Yeah, scope one emissions are the emissions from your company's own operations. Scope two emissions are for the emissions from the contractors that you use. You have to try to police your contractors and people that manufacture your raw materials. Scope three emissions are the emissions created by the users of what you produce. Okay. So if you're an oil company, you got to figure out how to track the emissions of hundreds of billions, not just hundreds of millions, billions of drivers who put petrol in their car and drive their cars. That's what scope three emissions amount to, okay? And there's not a company on the face of the earth that can accurately police scope three emissions. And ExxonMobil, to its credit, is a company that says, screw you, we can't do this. You know we can't do this, and we're not going to try and pretend to do this. And other companies, and who I won't mention by name, go along with the regulators stupidly, which only gives the regulators more power and only encourages them to continue cracking down. And so God bless companies like ExxonMobil who refuse to engage in the pretense of scope three emissions.
If I could just add a little bit onto the scope three emissions, there's 15 different categories. And the biggest one, of course, is people using the product, but it's everything up and down the supply chain. So you need to calculate the emissions embedded in the wiring that you're using, in the packaging that you're using, in the distribution of the oil to the service station, the emissions at the service station that is selling the oil, and so on and so forth.
Control.
It's crazy. And if I could just clarify, scope two actually applies to the energy, the emissions embedded in the energy that you're getting from the grid. That's actually scope
two. That's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And so Travis' response is total insanity. Yes.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Biden would describe that as kaboozy boogaboo.
Yeah, and my second and last one is
Brazil,
EVs are growing very fast from 1 to 700. And but the point is Brazil has ethanol in gasoline 27% and 14% of biodiesel in diesel. So I'm not sure that's viable EVs in Brazil. And the infrastructure that's needed is too extended, so big that we do not have money enough to invest in the EVs chargers extent.
Yeah, but 700% increase. Sounds so impressive.
From what? Yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly. From what?
They have 35. I mean,
read the fine print at the bottom of that. It says they're breaking all expectations and closing in on, wait for it, 3% market share. 700% growth gets them to 3% market share.
That is nothing.
And I can't remember if it was Irina. Not necessarily carbon dioxide. There's several different methane that is in there, if I understood that correctly. And I think it was
greenhouse gas emissions overall.
Greenhouse gas.
Well, I forgot my quote. Greenhouse gas emissions.
Sorry.
CO2 is number one, but eventually they'll roll in everything else.
What about water vapor, which is the number one greenhouse gas, supposedly?
Oh, don't.
Start tracking water vapor.
Do you want to go there?
They'll have to rename it to exclude the word water.
Water, because water has a positive.
Anyone buys it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you said
cloud making or something like that. I don't know.
Back into our topic. Do you see that this protest that we are having in the world are based on the restrictive regulation or other issues, other cause? How do you see these protests?
I think they're a direct reaction, at least the protests in Europe right now, the farmers' protests, are a direct reaction to energy policies.
Yeah.
Which is why they're not being covered in the American press.
Not at all. Not just the American. Coverage is really, really scarce.
Yeah.
On this
one. It's very niche. You have to be looking for or tracking certain sites, right?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because it's all over Twitter. There are people in Germany who are sending, you know, footage from these protests. It's idiotic.
Well, the French farmers are blocking Paris today or something for the next 5 days.
Good. Yes, that's I think that's the most impressive aspect of it. It spread like, if you'll excuse me, wildfire. It's like people were waiting for the last drop. And the last drop came with the German government's decision to eliminate subsidies for diesel, for farmers. And they decided they've had enough. And they are really out at it. I mean, the French farmers who were spraying Macron's house with manure. That was just great. Now, objectively, it's the same act of vandalism as the Extinction Idiots spraying paint on you know, buildings.
On the Mona Lisa.
But this is just
Lisa,
yeah, the last one, soup on the Mona Lisa, on the glass covering the Mona Lisa, which makes it just stupid. But I do feel that the farmers have a lot more justification than the climate alarmists to do what they're doing, besides manure washes up. You know,
whatever Patrick's on, I want to have whatever Patrick.
Yes, exactly. It's spreading, and I can't wait for this to reach Bulgaria. Hopefully it will, though I'm not so sure it will. But the fact is that I think these are the protests that we were predicting at the end of 2022. We just kind of, we were eager for them to happen sooner than they actually did. But they are happening. I mean, there are people who go out to the streets to support the farmers. And then there were these lame counter-protests organized by agencies close to the government, pro-government protests.
Yeah.
I mean, really. We had this in Bulgaria, too, a couple of years ago. Because, of course, protests is how politics happens.
Yes.
Now, but yes, these farmers are great, and I wish them all the best and a lot of patience.
And we should give a shout out to the farmers of the Netherlands, where all this germinated in the first place. In early 2023. Anyway, go ahead, Tammy.
Yeah, because they were like the canary in the coal mine, right? Where these environmental regulations had come along saying, you know, they set up these nature preserves right beside the farms and then said, you're contaminating the nature reserve with your runoff when it rains and stuff. And the farmers were like, well, why did you put it there? And every time the Dutch government brought in new rules, the farmers met it. You know, they were the most efficient farmers in Europe. And now they're saying, oh, sorry, you're too efficient. This is bad. If we buy you out, you're not allowed to farm anywhere else in the EU. So clearly it's not about that particular contamination that they're being accused of. They just don't like, it seems the bureaucrats don't like that they farm efficiently. So we don't want you spreading your type of farming elsewhere. Well, wait a second. They've been following all your rules. Why shouldn't they be able to replicate that? And with France, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know, is I read that France was also getting rid of the diesel subsidy in addition to the regulations. And I think this is part of the EU's commitment at COP28 and the other COPs that they would phase out the fossil fuel subsidies.
All right.
And this is the nations doing so. And I think the French response was, well, they said, with they kind of like Germany, we're going to take it all off now. We're going to rip off the Band-Aid. And then the farmers got mad and they said, oh, okay, we'll phase it out over 3 years instead. So, and the farmer's like, well, we don't want you to get rid of it at all. It's already super hard to do farming, and this will double our costs, and we'll have nothing because we have to invest in all this other stuff you want us to do. We can't use as much fertilizer, can't use as much pesticide or weed killer, which means our yields go down. We're not getting paid as much. And now you want to increase our electrical costs, our natural gas cost, and now our fuel cost? How can we produce food for you? And I think people don't understand that that's their food. That's, you know, shelves going empty.
I think people are starting to understand this support for the farmers that I see is really very strong. And it tells me that at least some people do realize this. But what you're saying about all these constraints piling up on the farmers, at the same time, the politicians are telling us we should eat less, especially meat.
Yeah.
So it's a two-pronged attack in a way.
You can't grow as much grain or these other things that they want us to eat.
Yeah, you'll have to eat less and pay more for it.
And pay more.
The politicians get their way.
If anybody has shoveled enough cow crap, they smell money. I drive by a cow truck on the highway and go, that's a lot of money you're driving by.
Yeah. I'm waiting for that. They'll limit the farming hours. It's too smelly.
And,
you know.
And David and the press is supporting, what are they supporting? Which side of
Well, that, I mean, the press, you know, we talk a lot about bias in the press in the United States and Europe, and it's, you know, a lot of it is what they do report, but so much more of it is what they don't report, okay? And so there's a media blackout in the United States from our legacy media on all of these protests, this enormous international story, thousands and thousands of people protesting every day in all of these different countries. Zero coverage in our mainstream press in the United States because it doesn't fit the narrative. The only thing that's going to be reported in our press in the United States about climate is whatever is in favor of renewables and the energy transition, period. Only favorable information related to that preferred narrative is going to be seen on any of our major TV news stations. And that's sad. That's very sad because we have a public, well, all of us know what's happening, right? Because we find it on Twitter and other social media and we pay attention. 98% of the American public has no idea these protests are happening in Europe. None whatsoever. I would say also probably 80% of people in the United States have no idea that our southern border is completely wide open and that 10 million people from all over the world have come into our country in 3 years, and our government has made zero effort to track any of them. None whatsoever. It's completely open border. You go out and talk to people on the street, 8 out of 10 of them won't have any idea what you're talking about. So that's the pernicious impact of state-owned media, which is what we have. It's not owned, but it's state-controlled media. In the United States, no different than what was seen in Soviet Union.
That's exactly what it
was. No different than what was seen in Germany beginning in the 1930s. It's the exact same thing.
Tammy and Irina, please, I have a question for you both. Which side David and Stuart will participate? Which war they will participate in, Iran or in Washington at the border of Texas?
I'm not sure I understood the question. Defend my rights or be a sheep? What was the question?
No, defend your rights and your territory, your land, or go fight Iran.
I bet on
fighting for their own land, you know.
I'm disgusted with the whole thing. How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, I will defend my family and my rights.
Yeah, right. Sure. Thank you so much. It was a great conversation today.
Thank you. And thank
great
you to everyone
comments.
Who
thank you. Thank you for all the comments.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. by